very much. Let me invite respected reporter of Agence France-Presse. Use the same corridor, please, that's intended. Next reporter will be Isna, from Isna. But you already said you called Dr. Beheshti as a paradigm for governance. In Iran, he is known as an icon of wisdom and in governance. And the first presser, you're also holding this presser. And this salon is called, named after him. Does this really symbolize anything for you? If so, how were you inspired by Dr. Beheshti? And how are you affected by his ideology and style? Well, we're at the threshold of the martyrdom of Dr. Beheshti in 1752 Iranian calendar. But he was martyred in 72 of his companions. You know, that shows how stained and dark the hearts of the hypocrites, terrorists are, and their horrendous crime. And it also indicates the support of a number of countries that are claimants of human rights, the support they have for the MEK. Now, our question is, why should the assassins of Dr. Beheshti, Martyr Rajai and Martyr Bahonar, why should they be given shelter in some Western countries? What response do they have? I mean, those who are speaking of human rights, what response do they have to the world public opinion and the media? Their country, on what ground have they harbored these people who have officially announced that they have killed 17,000 people in this country, and one of them is the martyr Dr. Beheshti. Now, as for Dr. Beheshti's personality, he was, you know, this is, he had multifaceted, you know, characteristics among the, his idiosyncrasies was his pure heart, his intention, his spiritualism, his, the moral values he adhered to, and also he was always seeking justice. These are the pivots of his character. Now, what made him stand out was his attention to the people, and he believed in the people. In the world, when all politicians, you know, mention and cite people's names, the word people they always use, they utter the word people, but that's only ceremonial. But what the late Imam Khomeini and what Martyr Dr. Beheshti, when they talked about people, they did believe in the people. And it was not only on a ceremonial basis or a PR stunt. They truly believed in the people. And I'm also emphasizing, as a seminary student, I'm also paying attention to the people and also the instrumental mechanisms in this. In the establishment, he created structure, infrastructure for the Islamic establishment. He was the one behind all the structures for the Islamic establishment. That's what Dr. Beheshti did. So these mechanisms and structures, I want to use them to for a revolutionary style management of the country's affairs. So, Isna reporter will be the next one, and after him from CCTV China. Let me offer congratulations to you on behalf of Isna. So there are speculations regarding your cabinet. There are different political groups that have supported you. What's your plan in order to kind of win the approval of all these groups and the makeup of your cabinet? And the political, do you look at them efficiency-wise or look at the political background and bias? Well, I said I've independently entered the race from all groups and parties, organizations, dignitaries who lend support for me. I cordially appreciate their support, but for the formation of government, I'm in the presence of the Almighty God, and before Him, I feel myself indebted to the people only when it comes to the formation of my cabinet. I'll have an eye to the people being revolutionary, being efficient, and being the people who have incentive to fight corruption, and those who work for the people. These are the indices that I will bear in mind while picking my cabinet members. But my advice for media idea is that avoid speculation and guesswork, you know. We will give you something better than that, not to the media reporters among the elite, but the entire people, the general public. We will let you take a look at a mechanism, and people can introduce whoever they think can serve and can have a say. They can simply introduce those people to us. That's I'm for the way people look at, and also I'm looking forward to hearing from you, the elite, and there will be this mechanism in place, and it will become operational in a few days. Definitely, we'll be happy to hear your comments regarding different people, if they are fit to do anything for the government. Then we will stick to meritocracy, hopefully. Let me now invite reporter from China's CCTV, and the next person will be from ILNA.
Salam, Dr. Raisi. First of all, congratulations. And as we know, the Chinese President Xi Jinping sent you the congratulation message. And as we know that China and Iran are comprehensive strategic partners, China attaches great importance to the development of China and Iran relations. So my question is, what is your expectation about the relationship between China and Iran in the future? Thank you.
Salam arz mikonam khidmat janab-ali az televizion dolati Chin hastam. Qabl az har chiz lazem midunam tabrik begam khidmat janab-ali piruzi شما رو در انتخابات. رئیس جمهور چین آقای شی جین پینگ پیام تبریک به جناب عالی ارسال کردند و همه میدونن که ایران و چین دارای روابط جامع راهبردی هستند و چین اهمیت زیادی برای توسعه روابط خودش با ایران قائل هستش. سوال من این هستش که انتظار جناب عالی از رابطه بین دو کشور چیست؟
ما روابط با چین رو از
our relations with China since the very early days of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Different governments have followed those relations. We have good relations with China as we speak. There are great potentialities and capacities existing between the two countries. We'll definitely try to revive those capacities. There are great relations that we have with China. We'll follow those ties. On the political arena, there's this comprehensive plan that was agreed by the two countries, but implementing it will be put on the agenda, definitely. Let me now invite the reporter from ILNA to raise his question. And then finally we'll have a reporter from Al-Mayadeen. Now I want to ask you about the price of basic goods and staples. Now, given the people's concerns regarding provision of their basic items and food, and because we're under sanctions, and we're facing hardships regarding monetary transaction and transfers, despite the efforts of the government, still we face the prices of staples go up every day. As a president-elect, what's your plan in order to address those issues? Now, the basic items and staples, that's on the top of the agenda of the government. I mean, overseeing the chain of production of basic items of the people and up to the consumption chain, that will be part of the priorities of the government. But the main issue is that we need, there should be a relationship between the people's food basket and also the items they require, the relationship with the dollar, or with, let's say, with outside of the country. What we need to do is a midterm plan and a long-term plan to disrupt this, to cut off this, I mean, dependency. We need self-sufficiency, and this is what we can do. We find this feasible, and we will try to start moving in that direction. We should be insufficient. Our people should be insufficient when it comes to basic commodities and goods. Okay, and as the last reporter, I ask Al-Mayadeen reporter
الحمد أبارك لكم الفوز في الانتخابات الرئاسية الإيرانية وأرجو أن تشهد إيران خلال فترة رئاستكم المزيد من التقدم والازدهاء في كافة الجوانب. فخامة الرئيس، هناك أصوات من داخل إسرائيل تقول أنه الرئيس الإيراني المنتخب إبراهيم رئيسي هو أكثر رئيس إيراني ممكن أن يشكل خطراً على إسرائيل، وأيضاً هناك مخاوف وأصوات من داخل أوروبا التي تبدي مخاوفها من مستقبل الاتفاق النووي وإمكانية انهيار هذا الاتفاق. هذا جانب. جانب آخر، أريد ردكم على مثل هذه التصريحات فيما يتعلق الأمر بالقضايا الإقليمية. هناك جملة من القضايا المهمة أريد أن أسمع رأيكم بصراحة عنها فيما يتعلق الأمر بالأزمة وتطورات الأحداث في سوريا منذ 10 سنوات حول الحرب المفروضة على اليمن، وأيضا طبيعة علاقتكم مع المملكة العربية السعودية في المستقبل. هل يمكن أن نشهد زيارة لكم للرياض أو زيارة من أحد قادة السعودية إلى طهران، طبعا في حال نجحت المباحثات بين الجمهورية الإسلامية الإيرانية والمملكة العربية السعودية الجارية منذ أشهر؟ شكرا لكم.
جناب رئيس، عرض سلام و خسته نباشید دارم خدمت شما و تبریک میگم.
Congratulations. Greetings to some Israeli officials regard you as the most dangerous president of Iran who will endanger the interests of Israel. In Europe, too, there are some people who are concerned about the endangering of the Iran nuclear deal during your presidency. What's your opinion regarding these reactions? And also, I want your comment regarding what happened in Syria 10 years ago. Regarding relations with Saudi Arabia, is it possible for us to see you travel to Saudi Arabia or have Saudi officials travel to Iran, of course, in case negotiations bear fruit between the two sides? Also, tell us about your ideas regarding Yemen war. Thank you very much. There's several questions. Now, the first question, the issue of the Zionist regime. The response of the Palestinian people and those whose rights have been trampled upon, how are they going to restore their rights? The Islamic Republic of Iran has announced, our plan says you should refer to a plebiscite. The public Palestinians are owners of Palestine, the land of Palestine, and before the Zionist regime feels threatened by us, they should feel threatened by the Palestinian and groups, resistance groups, those people whose rights have been infringed by the Tel Aviv regime. They need to fear those people. Well, the initiative in the field belongs to the Palestinian resistance groups. The Islamic Republic that follows the same policy that late Imam has simply is also in our constitution. Iran will always stand by the side of the oppressed. Palestine is an oppressed nation, and we will remain as supporter of Palestine. As for Yemen, as soon as possible, Yemenis need to think and to manage things. Any kind of interference by the Saudis or countries that hate the Saudis, you know, there's this aggression made against Yemeni women and children, their homes, their land, all this aggression needs to come to an end. Iran is stressing that there should be an stop to the war against Yemeni people as soon as possible. And it's Yemen that needs to be managed by the Yemenis. Yemenis themselves need to run their country, and they are the ones to decide what to do and how to run their country. We stress the cessation of hostilities in Yemen. Saudi attacks should stop. And as for relations with Saudi Arabia, I should announce that relations with all countries, interactions with all countries, that's what we have announced on the agenda, especially neighborly states. So our priority is having relations with our neighbors. Now, regarding Saudi Arabia, too, we will have the reopening of the embassies, no problem with reopening of the embassies. This policy has already been announced, and I'm stressing again that negotiations with Saudi Arabia, relations with all countries in the region, we have no problem with that. Thank you very much, Mr. Raisi. It's been more than an hour that we have had this press conference, and I'm announcing the end of it. There are 2 points I want to mention before we end this. One regarding the Iranian expatriates. At the beginning of my term in office, we will say that we will pave all the ground for the return of Iranian expatriates. The government feels responsible. The same way it feels responsible regarding the security of the and rights of people inside the country, we are also responsible regarding Iranian expatriates. We feel the same responsibility. They are Iranians, and we feel responsible about them, too. So the entry and the return of Iranians to the country needs to be facilitated by all relevant bodies. Second point, investment in Iran by Iranian expatriates need to be on the top of our priorities. Iranians living outside Iran, if they have made any income, the best place, the most secure place for them to make an investment is inside Iran, their own ancestral land. Security is always also provided for this kind of investment. Security is there for all. All investors all over the world need to know that today the Islamic Republic is among the most secure places for economic investment. And this security is guaranteed by the government for all entrepreneurs and all investors, especially Iranians outside the Iran. They should know that Iran is their land, is their soil, and they know that they have the priority when it comes to investment. And the final point I want to make is that we will have a website for opinions and ideas, those of elites, people in the media, people in the academia, and all think tanks, whoever has any opinions for the running of the government and also managing the economic situation, social, cultural, political areas, all areas. This is a bank of ideas, okay? It's a data bank. We'll definitely be looking forward for their opinions, and they can help us solve the problems. So we favor your opinions, and people's relation and contacts with me, it should not be regulated through people next of kin. Well, they have their own position and they're respected, but contacts and relationship with the people should not be through next of kin, relatives and friends. We will have a mechanism operational for a constant link and contact with people from all walks of life, and this will be an organized one, an orderly one, apart from a presence in popular gatherings. So hopefully when we get rid of COVID-19, we'll have in-person meetings. So hopefully we could have these contacts with all fora. So this is the constant contact with all walks of life from our society. This is on top of my agenda. I will be serving this republic, and for all the authorities and statements who will be my colleagues, links and contacts with people will be one of the top priorities of continuation of our mission. So I would also like to cordially appreciate the media, no matter what political inclination they have, regardless of any bias or any field that they're active in, provincial level, national one, social media, print media. During the election days, they were the best channel of communication with the people and their opinions. So in continuation of the way, I believe that media play a very pivotal role regarding this relationship and the reflection of people's concerns and relaying that to the authorities and also vice versa. Thank you very much, Dr. Raisi. And I should apologize to respected reporters who didn't have the chance to get this, the time to field their questions, this limited time. Thank you very much. That's the end of this press.
Welcome back, dear listeners. What you heard was the live coverage of the first press conference of the president-elect of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi. Dr. Raisi, during this press conference, said, "Great nation of Iran created big epic in June 18th election." He said people sent out message of unity and combating corruption by its huge turnout in election. Dr. Raisi said we can make change to benefit of people by tapping into our domestic capacities. He said our internal policies will focus on improving people's livelihood. Dr. Raisi said world must know that maximum pressure policy against Iran has failed. He said our foreign policy won't be restricted to JCPOA, and we seek to establish ties with all countries. Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi said our foreign policy will be result-oriented, and all talks must be aimed at removing restrictions. The president-elect of the Islamic Republic of Iran said his administration will begin fight against corruption as of first day in power. He said U.S. and EU must fulfill their pledges under JCPOA. Dr. Raisi said his administration will put its focus on removing pressure on production sector. And also, Dr. Raisi added that U.S. must be held accountable for violating its commitments under JCPOA. And Dr. Raisi said, I suggest U.S. government to return to its pledges as soon as possible. The president-elect said Iran's ballistic missile program is not negotiable, adding that he says no to prospect of meeting President Joe Biden. Also, Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi said Iran calls for fate of Palestinian people to be decided by themselves, adding that Iran always supports oppressed people of Palestine. And also, Dr. Raisi said Iran wants a war on Yemeni people to end immediately. And the last but not the least is that Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, the president-elect of the Islamic Republic of Iran, said Iran's priority is friendly relations with all neighboring states. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, many thanks for being with us in this live coverage of the press conference of the president-elect of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi. Many thanks for being with us. Please stay with IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. What you just heard was our special coverage. We now return to our normal course of programs. about debate.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. In this edition, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has decided to add the Yemeni resistance movement, Ansarullah, to its annual blacklist of parties violating children's rights. Now, this is happening while the ongoing war on Yemen and the continuous Saudi blockade is taking its toll on civilians, mostly women and children. In this edition, we will be scrutinizing the different aspects of this decision with a look at the bigger picture, but first, the report.
Yemen's Ansarullah movement blamed the United Nations for the Saudi atrocities committed against Yemeni children. The movement said the UN has always been providing the political cover-up for the Saudi war crimes. This came after the United Nations added the Ansarullah movement to its blacklist for groups for violating children's rights.
We were not surprised by this decision because the UN had removed the name of Saudi Arabia from its blacklist of the groups violating children's rights. The United Nations have not taken any real steps to protect the rights of Yemeni children who die every day due to continued blockade on food, medicine, and fuel. I believe that this is a resounding scandal for the Secretary General of the UN, who began his second term with this decision.
The member of the Supreme Political Council, Mohammed Al-Houthi, dismissed as baseless the UN accusation, saying it did not refer to an investigation on the ground as the movement has demanded. Meanwhile, the Minister of Information said the UN has turned a blind eye to the ongoing Saudi blockade on Yemenis, which causes the death of tens of Yemeni children on a daily basis.
This classification wasn't based on realistic data. We used to have the United Nations as a political cover for the war on Yemen and the killing of more Yemeni women and children, whether because of the continuous Saudi blockade or because of the airstrikes of Saudi fighter jets. This decision revealed to the world the true face of the United Nations, that it serves the agenda of the countries funding the UN.
Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war against Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed thousands of civilians, including women and children, and turned the war-torn country into the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations.
Observers say the United Nations blacklisting of Ansarullah is politically motivated and has no relation to the humanitarian situation in Yemen. They believe that the UN must take real actions against the Saudi blockade if it has real intentions to end the suffering of millions of Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
Now to continue this discussion, we're joined by Mr. Hamza Shaibani, Yemeni activist and political commentator out of Sana'a, and also Ms. Judith Bello, senior member of the United National Anti-War Movement. Thank you very much to both of you. Let's begin with Mr. Shaibani. Now, how do you think this decision will impact the UN and particularly its international image?
Thank you for having me. Unfortunately, the UN continues to be a platform for countries like the US and help them to provide the political cover. Unfortunately, such a move is not based on reality, and basically it's based on falsified reports or politically motivated. We all remember the war crimes and the atrocities that the Saudi US coalition has committed in Yemen. There are thousands of clips that were documented showing dead children who are half torn sometimes. But nevertheless, this did not motivate the UN to put Saudi Arabia or US in the blacklist. We all remember the incident that happened in Saada and Dahyan, where a school bus was bombed and 52 children were killed. In Yemen now, every 75 seconds a child dies because they don't have access to food or clean water. And this is according to the director of the food program in Yemen, World Food Program.
And what you just mentioned is a direct result.
This is not different from
what you just mentioned is a direct result of the Saudi blockade on Yemen, isn't it?
Absolutely. Today in Yemen, more than 80% of the population is in need of humanitarian assistance. This is because of the blockade that is imposed by U.S. and Saudi Arabia on Sana'a's airport and Hodeidah port. And back to this move, I believe this is no different from what happened in 2016 when Secretary General Ban Ki-moon enlisted Saudi Arabia in the blacklist of groups that violated children's rights in Yemen. And Saudi Arabia, after that, threatened them that they would cut the funds that they give them, which was approximately, I think, 100 million. A week or so after that, they had to take them off the list because, according to Ban Ki-moon, he said that they were put under pressure by Saudi Arabia that they would cut the funds. Again, this is something that definitely is not surprising from a UN, from an international institution like the UN, who should be credible. Nevertheless, they tend to be not neutral in this war, and they're not playing a very positive role in the war in Yemen. I believe that if Yemen had money and they could pay the UN, they wouldn't have been they wouldn't have enlisted Ansarullah movement in this list. We all saw what UN provided to the children in Syria, to the children in Lebanon, to the children in Palestine, most importantly. Definitely, this is just you know, a continuation of a negative role that UN is playing when it comes to protecting and providing political cover for countries like U.S. and Israel.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shaiban. You actually pointed out some very interesting issues, and also that flashback to the time when Saudi Arabia paid the UN. The UN actually took Saudi Arabia off the list because it was worried about the payments that it was receiving from Saudi Arabia. Let's bring in Judith Bello. Ms. Bello, if you could please tell us what you think. Is the UN chief actually serious in bringing peace to Yemen?
I don't think the UN is serious about its response to Yemen at all. They are behaving as a proxy for the Western powers right at the moment. The only base they have down there, the United Nations, which through which all the food and resources have to come into Yemen, is on a U.S. base in Djibouti. So they basically have deferred to the Western assault on Yemen, and they're riding it out rather than rejecting it. And the Saudis, the U.S. has given complete cover to the Saudis, even though they now have some stuff going on in Congress in opposition to it. The U.S. government is not terribly interested in what the people want. And they obviously have doubled down on their support of the Saudis in this matter. I think it's really a crime that it's going on the way it is. And the United Nations gives legitimacy to this nothing government of Mr. Hadi in Saudi Arabia, while at the same time they do not give legitimacy to Ansarullah, who are defending their country. And I think this right there says it all, that the United Nations in this particular matter, and they have had moments when they did a little bit better, although not frequently or not every time. In this particular matter, the United Nations is totally co-opted by their, not just Saudi money, but their major benefactor, which is the United States.
Now, Ms. Bello, Antonio Guterres is actually blacklisting Ansarullah as a party violating children's rights. Interestingly, we have witnessed Saudi Arabia and its allies purposefully targeting children. We've seen school buses being targeted by the Saudi.
Let me just say one more thing about this. You know, during the Iran-Iraq war, Saddam Hussein was mercilessly using chemical weapons on Iran and the Iranian people, and they were also using them on their own people in the Kurdish areas in the north of Iraq. And while they were doing this, Iran repeatedly, this is against the United Nations rules, so Iran repeatedly went to the United Nations and said, First they were the aggressors, and now they're attacking us with these illegal weapons. And the best that the United Nations could do, again, because this was a U.S.-instigated war, the best the United Nations could do was to condemn, quote-unquote, both parties. And they never did single out the actual perpetrator of these atrocities. And this is a problem with the UN. The United States does not live in the real world. It lives in the world of what it wants, and it will do or say anything. When I say it, I mean the blob, the Washington blob or whatever, not necessarily the people of America. But they will do whatever they want to oppress and humiliate those who they want to overcome. And they've done this to Bashar Assad. They did it in Libya. They done with the horrific murder of Gaddafi, the president at the time. And they're doing it in Yemen by refusing legitimacy to the one group that is broadly defending the country. They did it in Gaza with Hamas. They found a way to blame them. Like, if Hamas, you know, retaliates against an Israeli attack, then all the deaths that come from it are Hamas's fault. This goes on and on, and I don't know the answer to it. I know that it's an evil policy, very hard to work with the American government because, as I say, they really don't care what the people think. And they, as Mr. Pompeo said a few years ago, they lie, cheat, and steal. That's their training. And they do whatever it takes. And I am very glad that Osorilla is there defending their people. I'm not sure what this will cost them. I think it costs them what they already don't have, which is the control of incoming resources. Because what happens, of course, from the very beginning, the way the blockade works is that Saudi allies and United Arab Emirates allies get food, get the things that they need, get weapons, and Osorilla and the people of the majority of the people of Yemen go without, because that's part of the strategy of the war. And by doing this, it's just, in my opinion, it's sort of rubbing their nose in the dirt. It's a deliberate attempt to humiliate them and to, in some ways, maybe propagandize people in the West who are foolish enough to believe whatever the UN says. But the bottom line is that stopping them is a big problem. And the Ansarilla has fought long and hard, and they've had some gains, and they're making some progress against the Saudis. So we just have to hope that in their persistence and in their connection with other countries fighting for their lives against the same group, in connection with the Palestinians, in connection with the Lebanese, which under Hezbollah, in connection with Syrians, that if the people of the region stand together and persist, that eventually the world will retreat. That there won't be a choice to persist.
Hopefully,
because this is so wrong.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Let's bring in Mr. Chabon, since you mentioned the U.S. Mr. Chabon, the U.S. is providing logistics and arms to Saudi Arabia to continue this war on Yemen. Why doesn't that result in any serious measures from the U.N.?
Sorry, why doesn't that
result in any serious measures from the U.N.? The U.S. is actually providing the arms, the logistics, everything for Saudi Arabia and its allies. We don't see the U.N. condemning the U.S. for that.
Yeah, as I mentioned, unfortunately, the UN is acting like a platform and providing political cover for U.S. and other countries to do whatever they want. They basically gave them a free check to do whatever they want in Yemen, in Palestine, and in Syria as well. I truly believe that UN cannot be As an international institution, UN is not a neutral party when it comes to defending victims and condemning the aggressors. as long as they're getting funds from Saudi Arabia, as long as U.S. is supporting them in a way or another, they will continue doing whatever they want to do, and UN will just, you know, try to beautify their image, U.S. image, and keep providing them with excuses to implement their agenda in the region, which is destabilizing the countries and making sure that they're not independent and they don't take a stance against their agenda in the region.
Ms. Gallup, because of these different aspects that we have been mentioning so far during our show, Yemen's Ansarullah has slammed the decision of Antonio Guterres, calling it disgraceful. Do you believe that this view is shared by many across the world?
I actually do believe it's shared by most of the developing nations in the global south. I do not think any of them are fooled by the behavior of the United States and Saudi Arabia's case. And that is a reason for hope in a matter like this, because much of the world sees through these actions by the United Nations and by the United States, and they are resentful of countries like Saudi Arabia. The United States blames other countries for having dictatorships while ignoring the abuses in Saudi Arabia and the murders of people that happen there at the royal discretion, and so on. So I think that this is our strongest positive that we have going for us in creating a better world, is that the countries of the global south are not fooled. They all understand what's happening here, and they are gradually building their strength.
And let's not forget, Ms. Bello, let's not forget that we live in a day and age that with all of these mobile phones and different tools that people have, it's very difficult for mainstream media to shape public opinion as it used to decades ago. And it's, of course, more difficult to hide the truth. So how far do you think the UN can go?
To be honest, I don't know how far they can go. I do think that they lack legitimacy even here in the United States, because so many people feel that the United Nations has been co-opted by U.S. politics. But sadly, or maybe for the better, that many people continue to try to work with the United Nations because it's the only global forum that we have. And so they pass resolutions to do things that are often ignored, like the ones against nuclear proliferation, or the ones against, other kinds of weapons, or in support of human rights. And even though these are abused at the moment by the United States and nations, it remains that it's a global platform. And I think that's really the only legitimacy it has here, even in the United States, because it's been under attack. And that's one of the problems. You know, you have the United States destroys its tools.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shaban. Could we hope for any change in the UN chief's angle towards this issue? Could we hope for any change in the UN chief's angle towards this issue?
Now, this depends on whether the UN is actually trying to show the truth about what's happening in in Yemen, or whether they're trying to justify whatever the U.S. and Saudi Arabia are trying to do. As long as the UN is being backed by Saudi petrodollars and U.S., I don't really think that anything will change.
And
the war in Yemen has been going on for almost 7 years.
Thank you very much. We're running out of time, so I would like to have Ms. Bello's response on this question as well. Ms. Bello, do you believe that we could expect any change?
I think there's some potential for change just in the shifting of international strength in terms of the growing strength, for instance, of China in global politics and other things that are happening that actually weaken the United States. So I think there's some possibility, but I don't see any immediate relief on the horizon, because this entire This entire war in Yemen has from the beginning been under at least the outside external control of the United States, and the United Nations has been submissive to the U.S. agenda all along. So I guess I think long term that there's potential for relief, but not short term.
So we have to keep and continue making programs like this to raise more awareness, to get people to know what exactly is happening. Thank you very much to both of our guests, Hamza Shaban, a Yemeni activist and political commentator out of Sana'a, and Ms. Judith Bello, senior member of the United National Anti-War Movement from the U.S. Thank you very much to both of you. And thanks to all of you for following this edition of The Debate.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering a dance and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو ذا الرحمن.
Allah
هو ذا المنان.
لا إله إلا الله.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadli, from your program, Q&A on Islamic Beliefs, broadcasting from IRIB English Radio, with our dear and esteemed guest, Sheikh Murtada Karimi. Sheikh Karimi, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us, dear Sheikh. Last time we spoke about factors that lead to a blessed life. And you mentioned both some, how should I say this, some actual deeds that we can do, like helping others by lending them money. But also there you said that there was maybe a secret, spiritual, hidden aspect of this barakah that can take on many, many forms, both making your money go along further, but also increasing your money. And there's many, many forms of this barakah and blessing. You also said that being just by being in the state of ablution or staying awake from the morning adhan till sunrise, that in itself brings about many, many blessings. We will continue our program today because there are still some remaining factors that can lead to a more blessed life. Dear Sheikh, please go on.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you for your summary of the points that I mentioned in the previous session. Now, still there are some remaining points about the factors which increase one's sustenance and brings about, blessings and barakah in it. One of them is doing good to other people, especially your family members. So, for example, as father, if you are looking for more sustenance for your income. One of the ways, according to the narrations, is to do good to your family members. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is quoted as saying, the one who is good with his family members, then his sustenance will be increased. Then good-temperedness, what we call it in Islamic ethics as husnul khuluq. Again, we may not know the hidden secrets, but Imam alayhi salam is quoted as saying the treasures of sustenance are hidden in good-temperedness. Of course, we may give one philosophy that, for example, if you are a shopkeeper and you are a good-tempered person, naturally you will have more customers, and then the consequence would be that you will have more income. But there
makes
might
sense,
yeah,
because they would come back because of your good manners, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this can be one of the explanations, but there might be other hidden secrets that we are unaware of. Giving food to other people. Especially the believers. There are many narrations about the importance of giving food and even water to other people.
You mean like providing dinner, inviting over for food?
A meal, yeah, something like that.
Meal,
even
okay.
A piece of bread, or even a glass of water.
Okay.
To this extent, we have in the narration that it's highly recommended. Of course, we are talking about our time and era. It does not make sense in some cultures to go to the street and give water to the people.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
So you may think of some ways. I mean, inside the community, for example, you have a meeting on Thursday night, for example. You may think of providing some food or a package.
To cheer them up, actually.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
To make them happy.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's the point. So the Holy Prophet is quoted as saying the sustenance of the person who feeds other people would come to him very, very fast. Then the Holy Prophet makes an example. The other point is to pray, to supplicate for other people, for other believers. We know that one of the reasons that help our supplications to be answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is that we need to pray for other people before praying for ourselves. Al-Jar Pamadar, this is the famous narration of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha, first your neighbors and then the people of your house. So we are highly encouraged to supplicate and pray for other people. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam is quoted as saying, pray and supplicate for your brothers and sisters in faith. If you do that, then sustenance will come to you very quickly.
So this is actually, if you think about it, in itself is a blessing from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's
because
the point.
He says, if you pray for others, I will give to you and also to those you have prayed for. So it's a never-ending circle. If they pray for you and you pray for them, sustenance all day, every day, right?
And your and your own prayers will be answered as well.
As
because
well.
This is one of the ways for our prayers to be answered. You see, I believe that in some of the factors that we mentioned, witness and refer to the fact that Islam is a religion of, thinking about other people. It's not only thinking about yourself. So
it's about the community.
Yeah. The rights of the people are highly important from an Islamic perspective. Giving charity. As you mentioned in the previous session, I talked about giving loan to other people, lending money, but
yeah.
Again, we have the same for giving charity. Sometimes there are some people, poor people, they are not able to return the loan, so we need to give them charity or sadaqah. Imam Ali alayhi salam is quoted as saying that to increase your sustenance through giving charity. And of course, we have some obligations like homes and zakat, especially about zakat. We have some narrations that giving zakat, which is an obligation, it will increase your sustenance. Salatul Layl, the recommended prayer, which
the night
is
prayer.
Yeah, the night prayer, 11 rak'ahs, and we know that there are, as I mentioned, it is highly recommended, but it's not an obligation. But those people who are practicing that practice night vigil, and I mean, they are awake a portion of the night, especially some minutes before the morning Adhan, and they say these 11 rak'ah of night
prayer. They worship Allah and pray to Him.
I think they can witness again that they have seen the blessings of Salatul Layl and night prayer in their life. And this is one of the factors for giving barakah and blessings to our life and our family members and our sustenance. So these are some of the factors and causes for increasing our sustenance and bringing barakah in our sustenance.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
On the other hand, there are some narrations which tell us that there are some actions which remove barakah from your life.
These are also very important to know, because if you get your barakah and then you directly remove your barakah.
Exactly. That's
so
the point.
How to keep it then, actually?
Exactly. So quickly, let me refer to some of them. As I mentioned, faith and taqwa are the main elements for bringing about sustenance and barakah in our life. On the other hand, sinning is one of the main reasons for removing this barakah from our life and our sustenance. There are many narrations in this regard. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam is quoted as saying, a servant commits a sin, and because of that, sustenance is given, is taken from him, is removed from him or her. The Holy Prophet is quoted as saying, if you do not act upon your duties upon regarding other believers, meaning that, I mean, we know that as a believer, as believers, we have some responsibilities toward other people. If you are not practicing them, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will remove the barakah from your sustenance unless you make repentance to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Some people might ask that we see some people who do not may not believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala at all, or they may commit a lot of sins, but they are enjoying their life, they have a lot of properties and wealth. So if sin is a reason for reducing sustenance, so why these people have all these monies and properties and they are enjoying
their life? Doesn't make sense. They have no belief in Allah, or they do not obey Him, but they have all of these, as we call them, blessings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. What's the reason behind this?
First of all, what we mention are a part of the reason. I mean, what we mention as the elements for increasing one's sustenance or bringing barakah inside the life, they are part of the reason. There are other reasons as well. We need to take all of them into consideration. The second point is that sustenance is not the physical sustenance. We have also the spiritual